As the session concluded, Muriel, still flying on adrenaline, faced the gallery where the onlookers, shoulder to shoulder, were struggling to their feet. There were at least a dozen reporters here on special assignment and scores of civilians drawn in by the headlines of the last 24 hours. As Muriel walked into the witness room, several reporters shouted her name, and she promised to be along in a moment. Larry, however, immediately shepherded four females over the threshold, two adolescent girls, an agreeable-looking woman near 40, and at the rear, an older lady whose hair was dyed a lifeless black. She was the only one of the four whom Muriel recognized. "Mrs. Salvino, of course," said Muriel, welcoming Luisa Remardi's mother. The old woman was tough and to the point, and Muriel had always taken it that Luisa was a chip off the old block. The young girls with her had faces almost identical to one another, but the 2 years between them resulted in a significant contrast in their overall appearance. The second to enter wore makeup and was almost a foot taller than her sister. But both were lean and dark, long-jawed with stray lengths of jet hair and large dark eyes. Each was very pretty. Muriel realized at once they were Luisa's daughters. In her abrupt way, Mrs. Salvino dismissed Muriel's greeting. "This here," she said, "don't you people ever come to an end with this?" "Nuccia," scolded the fourth female. "Muriel," said Larry with an uncharacteristic ceremonial air, "you may remember Genevieve Carrier. She was a close friend of Luisa's." Genevieve had been called upon as a driver and escort. Mrs. Salvino was one of those Kiwani Italians who went to Center City 2 or 3 times a year, and always with apprehension. "I got no need to come down here," Mrs. Salvino said. "Darla heard the television, so she decided she's coming, which is mostly an excuse, if you want to know, to skip school."
"Like I need an excuse," answered her older granddaughter.
The little one was shy and wore braces and hung back by the door. But Darla was clearly a handful. She said, "It's my own mother and you don't tell us nothing? I mean, that's totally bogus." Larry intervened. "I don't think you learned anything about what happened, Darla. That was just a bitter, dying man entertaining himself."
"I sort of believed him sometimes," she answered in the usual contrary fashion of people her age. "This other guy, the one they say done it, it all sounds so sketchy with him. I don't think somebody as sick as this dude even has the energy to make stuff up."
"You should know about making up," said her grandmother.
Darla briefly offered Mrs. Salvino a sick, simpering look.
"The only thing with this one," said Darla, "is that he's like such a total gross-out to look at. I mean, I know he's sick and all, but he couldn't ever have been, like, good-looking. That's just so not Mom."
She turned to Genevieve.
"Isn't that right, Aunt Genevieve? Mom totally wouldn't have been with somebody like that."
"Never," said Genevieve. "Your mother always hated that man."
Genevieve touched the girl's bare shoulder and thus missed the look Muriel exchanged with Larry.
"Why did she hate him?" Muriel asked.
"There was just bad blood," Genevieve said and looked at her watch, then lifted a beckoning arm to the girls. As she edged the group toward the door, Larry said, "We'd really like to talk to you some more." Genevieve was quick to shake her head. She had an excuse ready, family vacation.
"When do you leave?" Muriel asked.
"Tomorrow," said Genevieve. "Early." Muriel opened the door and let Genevieve go. She and Larry were alone now, an odd reprieve with the churning sounds continuing outside.
"We should go up there and depose her," said Larry. "She'd twist and turn, but I don't make her for the kind to lie under oath. I don't see us getting anything out of her without a subpoena, though."
"I wouldn't mind having that stuff about Luisa always hating Erno on the record. We have to make him a liar however we can."
"You did a pretty good job of that."
She accepted the compliment with a smile, but she'd learned that winning lawsuits was more than courtroom pyrotechnics. Most cases were determined before they started by the character of the judge or the jury, and Kenton Harlow worried her. "If he makes findings that Erno is credible," she told Larry, "I'm going to be stuck with this case for a long while. Talmadge thinks if it drags on, Reverend Blythe may talk somebody into running in the primary." The Reverend Dr. Carnelian Blythe, who seemed to regard every indignity suffered by an American black as equivalent to slavery, had already laid claim to Squirrel and was leading marches and giving press interviews on the courthouse steps.
"Somebody black," said Larry.
"Naturally," she answered.
"So what's the alternative?" Larry asked.
You know the alternative, Larry. Figure it out fast. Either incinerate Erno or say we fucked up and stop the bleeding as soon as we can.
We didn't fuck up anything.
So, let's punch some holes in Erno's canoe. I'm going to get hold of the attorney Erno's got for his nephew and see if I can get a word with Collins. And keep working on the gang angle. The Geos may have promised Erno something we haven't figured out yet. And see if you can dig up the guy Erno shot at Ike's. Something tells me he won't stand up and salute for that self-defense crap Erno was peddling. Larry liked all those ideas. The peace between them felt good.